Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul with your host, Dr. Valerie N. Parker, businesswoman, author, speaker, and life coach. Dr. Parker is the president of Arise by VMP, which is a speakers bureau and public relations company. She is also the visionary and founder of the Soul of a Woman Foundation that brings awareness to domestic violence and children living in single-parent homes. Hot Topics from the Soul is a virtual lifeline to the community, discussing social and political issues, relationships, finances, motivation, and inspiration. For information regarding products, services, and resources, visit www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. That's www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. Ladies and gentlemen, I now present to you your host, Dr. Valerie Parker.
Well, good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm your host, Dr. Valerie Parker, and I'd like to thank you all for joining us tonight. I tell you, this has been an explosive day. Today we've honored a man, Nelson Mandela, who, after serving 27 years in a prison in South Africa, came out and leading his people into freedom. And this is such a historical event, even in his death. And one of the things that drew me to Mr. Mandela was when he did a speech after being free. Here's this man who was in prison for 27 years for the right to be free, and he comes out with no anger or resentment. And he quoted one of Marianne Williamson's poems, which are one of my greatest pieces that she's written, called Our Deepest Fear. And it says, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are more powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. And I just wanted to honor President Mandela tonight and his journey as he is going to be laying in space. I have my co-host with me, Shirley Carter. Shirley, are you there?
Yes, I am, Val. Thank you. And I myself as well, pay homage to President Mandela, you know, a man who changed the world and a man that so many know, but then there's also so many who don't know him. But I give homage to him, and thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Shirley. It is always a pleasure having you co-host with me. Tonight I have a very special guest. You know, last week we had Mama Nola. She's the founder of Through the Red Doors, and we had some of our students speaking about bullying, their experiences that they have, and how they were able to overcome the obstacles of the bullying that they've experienced in school and from their relatives. And I wanted to continue on with that talk, and I have a special guest with me, Lowell Levine, founder of Stop the Bullying Now. And I'm delighted to have him on us because his foundation was created to put an end to the epidemic of bullying among today's youth by empowering them through counseling, life skills, trainings, open communication, and creative outlets. Noel, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you for having me.
Lowell, I'm so excited. I saw your interview that you had done on bullying, YouTube video, so you can tell the listeners how they can get access to that. But I wanted you to share about your foundation, Stop the Bullying Now Foundation, How is it that you came about? Here you are, a man, and I believe you're in real estate. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm a licensed real estate broker up here in Palm Beach County.
So how did you transcend from being in real estate to starting a foundation to aid our youth?
Well, what happened was in 2010, I decided to run for the school board in Palm Beach County. And to my surprise, as I was campaigning and going to many different groups to talk and to campaign, speaking to mostly parents and a lot of grandparents, I learned that their biggest concern with their children K through 12 was the out-of-control bullying problem that they were facing, and they were fearing for their child's safety. I was not successful in winning the election, but it took me to the next level, where I did an investigation in 2011 to find out what these parents were so concerned about and upset about. So I did a complete survey of the bullying problem, not only in the county of Palm Beach, state of Florida, but countrywide. And I found out that there were not that many anti-bullying foundations that were addressing the problem. And then I learned that Palm Beach County at that time was the worst school district of the 67 school districts of Florida with bullying complaints. So what I did was I opened up a corporation in January 2012, the Stop Bullying Now Foundation, Inc., and I immediately applied to the federal government, the IRS, for a 501c3, because I always believe that a 501c3, if you get approved for that, it shows legitimacy to the public. But it took 12 months to get approved after many applications and questions and answers and communication with the Internal Revenue Service in Covington, Kentucky, which is the local chapter. But in January of 2013, they approved my application, and they awarded me the 501c3. And then immediately we started to go out to introduce ourselves to as many groups as we can so we can get the message out about bullying. I spoke to the Central Disease Center in Atlanta, Georgia, and the Department of Education in Washington during my investigation. And they told me that bullying is the worst epidemic among children K through 12, and that I found out now that 2012 was the worst year ever. And I asked them what has been done, and they tell me that what has been tried in the past has not been successful. They have been going to the schools to speak only to the children. So being a corporate problem solver as a profession, and I'm also a licensed real estate broker, I've taken a different approach. We set up what is called Educate Bullying Awareness, and we are targeting not only the children, but we're heavily targeting the parents, the grandparents, aunts, uncles, elder cousins, and the nannies. And what we do is we teach them what creates a bully and what to look for in your child if your child is being bullied, because the statistics are unbelievable. For example, 2012, it's documented that 20 million children of the 70 million children that go to public school, private, religious, or public in this country are being bullied. Of that amount, about 160,000 children per day are afraid to go to school because of the fear of being bullied. 400,000 children talk about committing suicide in this country each year. And we have about 15 or more children per day that are committing suicide because of being bullied. Now, the problem is, and the challenge is, of the 20 million children that are being bullied, only 4 million of them, percent, 25%, speak up to a parent, a teacher, or a principal. That means the remaining 16 million don't say anything because of fear. The parents that I have met whose child had committed suicide tell me they never even knew that their child was being bullied, and they had and they had no indication that he was or she was being bullied. So I did a lot of research, and I found out what creates a bully. And 50% of the children who are bullies have mental health problems. And I found out the schools are not doing anything about it because they don't have the money to have mental health counselors in the district. Where I live in Palm Beach County, they don't not only not have mental health counselors, the general counselors are now handling up to 1,000 students each one, which is overwhelming for them. So what we do is we talk to the parents about what to look for in their child if they're being bullied but afraid to say anything, because there are red flags that come out, and some parents never saw the red flags until it was too late. And what we teach them is 90% of a child's brain is developed by the time they go to kindergarten. So therefore, they are developing a personality. They dress a certain way. They eat a different way. They conduct themselves a certain way. They engage with other children a certain way. They sleep a certain way. They watch certain shows. But we tell them, if you see your child, who you know for 5, 6, 7 years or more, if you see them changing their attitude, changing their personality, eating habits, going out with other children, or afraid to go to school, or afraid to go to the park, that is a red flag, and that's telling you that there's something going on in that child's mind that is being created by another person who is what is called a bully. And you must sit down with that child and start talking to them, or get them to a counselor to speak out as a neutral person to get the information out of them, because they may be afraid of telling it to their parents. The second problem we're faced with is the schools. Principals and teachers are not educated enough to understand the bullying problem. So they do not take the necessary steps to get involved aggressively to diminish the bullying in their particular class or their particular school. What we believe in is that when we find out a child is being bullied, because a call comes into us and we get multiple calls per day, we contact the principal and we aggressively ask them, bring the bully into an auditorium, bring the bully's parents, bring the child that's being bullied, and you have to sit down and you have to talk it out. So
well,
it comes out into the open.
How open are the parents, though, Lou?
Excuse me?
How open are the parents to come in? Because a lot of times when the child is a bully, it's because the parent is a bully, too.
Well, yes. I would say our experience has been that at least 80-85% of the parents cooperate. There are a small percentage of parents, about 15%, that always believe in denial. But what our experience has been, parents have been cooperating simply because most of the information we get from the telephone call or from our email is coming from the parents begging for help. What happened was, during this year, we are the only anti-bullying foundation in the country that has been considered a gold star participant because of our transparency, our accountability, and our legitimacy. And what happened is Google.com has decided to become a major sponsor with my foundation. So they spend a lot of money, of their own money, advertising us all over the country, including Florida.
Wow.
So therefore, we are getting calls from all over the country, cities I never even heard of, like Liberty, Kansas, Bear, Delaware, where parents are telling us their child is being bullied, They learn they're being bullied, or they attempted suicide. We have sometimes tried to help children, and if it's not that successful, we recommend they change schools or they move out and go into new communities where closer to family so they could get better support. But these calls are coming in constantly, and we take a very aggressive point of view. Now, here in Palm Beach County, for example, we had, for the month of November, we must have had about 15, 16 serious calls. And I was not able to get the principal to understand what I was trying to explain. So I called the elected school board members, and they were terrific. They stepped in with me, and they got the problems resolved. Unfortunately, we lost one child in Latana. We lost another child in Port St. Lucie. But in whole, we do get the elected officials involved. And if I can't get the school board member involved, then I go to the state representative. And I put them all on notice. This is what's happening. I need you to get in and rectify it, because if you don't take an aggressive point of view, I can't go to the school because they're not inviting me in. There's confidentiality involved, so they don't tell me everything. But I'm putting you on notice, and sometimes I back it up with a letter, and I tell the elected officials and the principal, if you don't get step in and defuse this situation, and something happens to that child, they commit suicide, then I'm going to recommend to the district attorney to bring murder charges up on you. So
Wow. We
take a very aggressive road. You got to remember, a child is priceless and a child is precious. And a lot of these parents don't have the power or the forcefulness to get their message across, and that's why they come to my foundation and we do it for them. And our success rate is very, very, very high. So that's what we do. That's how I do it. I'm not an educator by background. I am a businessman, and I run the foundation like a business where I want to get the results. In business, you want to make profits. In here, I want to save children's lives. So when I get up to speak in front of 100 or 200 or 1,000 people, I tell the audience very simply, this is not a job, it's a mission. And I don't care what people think of me. I don't care what they say about me. My mission is to save your child's life. Because when kids go to school today in 2013, it's not like I went to school back in the 1950s. You send your child to school in the morning in 2013 with bullying and teen violence. There's no guarantee they're coming back that afternoon. And it's always better to have your child cry than you cry. Because when your child cries, he didn't get what he wanted or fell and hurt himself, and you cry because you put your kid in a casket and you're putting him into the ground. Now, there's another statistic that's coming out that I'm working on, and then I'll let you ask me any questions you want. 10% of all parents, 10% of all parents that have a child that committed suicide because of bullying and they didn't know about it, are committing suicide themselves, and 50% of them have succeeded because they can't live with the guilt of not recognizing it, the empty room, the empty birthdays, and the empty holidays. And that's what's going on, and that's what we're trying to do, is reduce the bullying problem and educate the people that are closest to the children, which are the parents and the grandparents.
Okay, so Lowell, you're saying that the children that commit suicide, their parents ultimately wind up doing the same thing?
What's happening is a statistic coming out that we're working on right now that we know of about 10% of the children that have committed suicide, the parents who can't live with it, within 3 years try to commit suicide themselves, and 50% of them are successful because they can't live within themselves because of the guilt, because of the empty room or the empty holiday and the empty birthday. They just can't live with it anymore. And that's becoming another major problem. That's why we recommend those parents to get psychological help if a child does commit suicide. In Palm Beach County, we have our own mental health counselors that don't work for me, but they're independent. And I have sent and recommended parents and their children to go to them. The last three that we had were three children who locked themselves in the room afraid to go to school. 2 6-year-olds and a 5-year-old. And we got them out and we got them back to school. Yeah, bullying starts at 5, but it really starts at 3. We get complaints from parents from the playground where kids are pushing or throwing sand at other kids and bullying them around or punching them or kicking them or spitting on them. So it has nothing to do with age. It has to do with the child itself because it starts, most of it starts at 5 years old when they go to kindergarten, and it goes all the way up to 18. The toughest age on bullying is 10 to 14. That is the largest percentage of the kids that do get bullied. The girl in Polk County who committed suicide last month and jumped off the concrete truck, she was 12. The boy over at Palm Beach Academy School, he was 13. So, and the one up in Port St. Lucie, all this in the last few weeks, he was 11. But this is what's going on. It's real. It doesn't get the news that it's supposed to get. And when I speak to Pierce Morgan's producer and Cooper and Anderson Cooper's producer and the other major network producers, they all tell me when we're ready to have the topic, we'll bring you in. But what I say to them, do you want to do it before a major problem or do you want to do it after the major problem? And they tell me, look, there's so many stories out there, we can't get to all of them at the same time. Now, there are many situations that take place in this country that nobody knows about. And I'll give you an example of one in Fort Myers. A boy was barely, a 15-year-old boy was barely bullied by two children. And he was very upset, afraid to tell anybody. He was threatened that if you do tell anybody, we'll beat you up. So one day he got his grandfather's gun. He went on the bus. This is back in May of last year before school let out. And he took the gun out of his backpack, but another boy saw it, grabbed it. They had a fight. The gun fell to the floor of the bus. It didn't go off, luckily. But he admitted to the police that he was going to kill the two bullies and all 50 people on the bus, including himself. It happened in New Orleans, same thing in Seattle, Washington. It's happening all over the country. We heard about the one that took place in Newtown, Connecticut, but these would have been worse. Then you have children that come into school with guns or knives or they have problems in the cafeteria. This is a major, 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 major problem. And I'm trying whatever I can to address the problem and get it notified through the parents, through the schools, through the politically elected officials, and there's just so much, you know, we can do.
Wow. I tell you, these numbers and statistics are so alarming. Shirley, you know about something happened in Detroit, correct?
In Lansing, actually. We did the show last Tuesday, and that Wednesday night, we had a high school student here to commit suicide. Beautiful young lady, very talented. She was into sports. She ran track, and she was also a varsity volleyball player, and she was attending nursing. We have a nursing program at one of our other high schools. She was attending that. And she's a HOPE scholarship. Our HOPE scholarship is where a student is academically selected because of not only their academics, but their sports and their leadership in the community. And she was holding a 3.5 GPA, but she was being bullied. She could not handle it, even being so involved in activities and had just received a scholarship to... It was an academic/athletic scholarship to attend college. So she was all set. But the pressure of the bullying pushed her over the edge.
That same thing happened in Harlem, New York. Miss Monez, a 13, 14-year-old girl, came home, went upstairs to her room, parents didn't see her come down. She wasn't answering for her dinner. They sent her younger brother up to the room, and there she was, hanging from the chandelier while the light up there, with a big note on her. I tried to talk to my principal. I tried to talk to my teachers. I tried to talk to you, and nobody listened to me. She hung herself. 2 months later, her mother committed suicide.
Oh, wow.
It's happening every single day. I could reduce this. I know what I have to do. The problem is I got to get the people in this country, the wealthy corporations, the wealthy individuals, to start donating money to TJ Maxx is a supporter because they understand this. But the point is I got to get these people, because if they send donations into the StopBullyingNowFoundation.org, which is the website, I could send out, because I don't have overhead. My foundation is not like many other charities in the country, where for every dollar that comes in, 40 cents stays in the foundation and 60 cents goes
right
to overhead. I have no overhead. I have free rent, because where I work at RA Associates in Palm Beach Gardens, my office is where I run my foundation. I don't have labor. I don't have anybody working for me. Anybody who does anything for me, they get paid on a performance situation. The board, they do some work for me. But that means about 90% of what comes in is used for the foundation. And I could get the message out by getting it into newspapers, magazines, go out and speaking engagements to large groups. Look, anywhere. I was at that Newport Hotel last month. I get invited to different organizations to speak. I can reduce this thing because I can give them educate bullying awareness. And by doing that, you can make the parents more aware of what's going on, because this is a 24/7, 365 epidemic. It's not just October, anti-bullying month. Okay, fine. That's great. Nothing wrong with it. But what do you do about the other 11 months? Or make a bully a friend day. What about the other 364 days? It needs constant work, and it can be done buying radio time, television time, but all that needs money, and without money, it's hard to get the message across. But I know I could do it, because what I'm doing is helping. And we just had a situation at Duncan Middle School, which a boy was badly beaten. He was bullied. And the principal did react very nicely, and the boy's okay now. They brought all the parents in, and they shook hands, and they made peace. But I had to get involved. It was just getting out of hand. An autistic child was afraid to go to school at one of the schools here in the county, and we got that resolved. Where I get the cooperation with the principals, it does work. Many times we don't get the cooperation with the principals because they're afraid of their job. And what's more important, the job or the life of a child? So that's the obstacles that we have to go through.
Lowell, you do life skills training now with the Soul of a Woman Foundation, which serves victims of domestic violence. You know, bullying and domestic violence are hand in hand. Somehow
Society
thinks they're two separate tracks, and they are not. Bullying, domestic violence is anytime someone overpowers you or controls you, manipulates you to do something outside of your normal habitat or your will. With your life skills training, I do personal development workshops because I believe that a lot of the abuse occurs when individuals have no idea who or whose they are. And because they feel inadequate of who they are, and they see someone that looks or they think is superior to them, they feel that the only way to stop them from progressing is to overpower them physically.
That's right.
And damage them emotionally. So what are some of the skills training that you offer in schools and conferences and workshops that you do? What is some of the foundation? Can you give some tips of pointers that you give individuals? Is it for children, or is it for children and parents?
Well, you got to look at both the parents and the children, because the parents are the guidance. You got to remember, there's another stat that you have to understand. of the 70 million children that go to public school in this country, private, religious, and public, only 18% live in a two-parent household. And that's a major problem because a lot of the parents are not there after school. But what creates a bully is, I said that 50% of them are mentally ill and they need help. If they were able to get the right help, it could diffuse a lot of them from being a bully. But 25% of the children that are bullies because they are abused. They're abused in school, they're abused at home, and this is the way they let out their inner frustrations, by taking control of somebody. And the third type of a bully is one that's always put down by either school, friends, or parents. Stay in your room, don't talk when I talk, you don't look good. They're constantly, or you don't dress right, you don't act right, and they're constantly being knocked down. And the only way they can overcome that is by taking someone under their wing and controlling them by bullying them. I do recommend to parents that there are two type of after-school activities that have been successful and do help a person who's being bullied or hasn't been bullied yet to gain the confidence that they cannot be bullied. Theater is one of them. Anybody who goes and works in theater, you know, dancing, acting, singing, and they're learning that kind of a skill, they develop a huge amount of self-confidence because they're able to get up in front of a class and speak without fear. They begin to get on a stage and perform in front of an audience without fear. Those children, it's almost impossible to be subjected to bullying because they look at the bully as someone that can't bother them. You know, you don't bother me. The second is karate and martial arts. Those children that go to those after-school activities, they develop also a lot of self-confidence. And you got to remember, when they go to martial arts and they go to the theater, they're with children from other areas of the county. They're not with the same children that live in their neighborhood or in their school. And they develop a lot of self-confidence as well. But what I also tell the parents is never have your child confront the bully. Because last year, over 1,000 children were killed by bullies because they tried to stop a bully from being a bully. And that's the worst thing that you could do because they don't want someone telling them what they can't do. What you have to do is report it to the principal, the teacher, or your parents and let them take it from there.
Yes, that is a problem. That is a huge problem, though.
That's
right.
A major problem.
You fight them or you run. Either way, you still get beat up.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. So you have to develop some kind of self-confidence. You have to be a good communicator with your parents or your grandparents, and you have to be able to withstand yourself, and that is not easy. It's not easy because, remember, when we go to school, we have different nationalities, we have different religions, we have different economic backgrounds. Now, let's take the state of Florida. It's an amazing statistic, and I'm fighting the politicians all the time when I have an opportunity to speak, and they're in the audience. 83,000 children that go to public school in this state are homeless. Can you imagine that? 700,000 children of the 2.7 million that go to public school live in poverty or below poverty. They're not doing anything about it. We don't spend our time and resources on the future of this country, and that's our children.
Right.
And they don't get it. I don't know if they don't get it or they don't want to get it. Maybe they look at it and say, well, those people don't vote, so I don't care. But that's a terrible thing because they were once children. We were all children at one time. I was a child in 1944, 45, 50, and 52. These are children. These are the future of our country. How could you let them live in this poverty ad? How could you let them be homeless? And how can you let these things go on when they're hurting the education? You know, the United States of America has now been rated 24th in the world in education. We used to be number two because we teach to a test. We don't teach to a subject. And the other problem is all 23 countries that are ahead of us, they go to school 210 days a year. We go to school 180. Somebody has to look into this. And it's so complicated.
Let me ask you this. Yes. How do we handle the situation when a bully is reported and the fight breaks out and the principal suspends the bully? Then what happens is the bully comes back to school even though they're suspended or meet that child down the street. That's outside of the school.
Well, number one, I'm not in favor of suspension. I believe in communication. And I believe that they have to get the bully and somebody who's taking care of that child, whether it's a parent or a grandparent or aunt and uncle, into the school to sit down and have a conversation. If they see that child is beyond recognition as far as communication, they have to get him the proper mental health to talk it out with somebody. You just can't suspend the child because if they're suspended, they're losing education, they're sitting at home, they're probably getting angry, they're getting mad, and you're not accomplishing anything. It doesn't make any sense.
But if they're disrupting the other students, plus being a bully, the teacher can't handle them, the principal can't handle them, the parent is not participating, what do we do then?
That's a question that has no answer to it at the present time. It's very difficult. You can't take a child and put them into a prison. I don't believe in that. You can't take a child and put them in a juvenile situation. He needs mental health counseling. He needs somebody he can relate to, he can talk to, that's not part of his family or his daily activities. Somebody who he may develop confidence with where he can talk to. That's where the problem comes with the school, because when I go to the safe school department and tell them this is what has to be done, they look at me and say, Lowell, we have no money. They cut our budget 22% every year. I called the Department of State in Florida, the Education Department of the State of Florida. Do you know how many people work in that department? One. I said, one person? For the whole state, for 2.7 million children? They said, Mr. Levine, we understand your predicament. We understand your foundation. But they keep cutting our budget, and we got no money. We're down to one person. One person! Does that make any sense? So the politicians, unfortunately, are a contributing factor in what's going on. But to have a child like you described, it's extremely difficult. Because that child, as they get older, gets a hold of a gun, and walk in and kill 20, 30, 40 kids at one time. They need help. They need someone to help them. They need guidance. They need somebody to be able to talk to them. And if the parents are not able to do it, or the teachers, the parents are not able to do it, they got to get a professional to do it. That's why we have a lot of these ball players like LeBron James or Dwight Wade and Alonzo Mourning. You know, they do it, and they do reach some of these kids. But they don't, you know, there's only 24 hours to a day and 7 days to a week, and it's not that easy. Do you know in the state of Florida, we have close to 28% of the children that enter ninth grade in this state that don't even graduate high school. Where are these children going to get jobs? Who's going to hire them? They don't even have a high school diploma. I know two girls that work in Publix here in Palm Beach Gardens that dropped out 11th grade. They're now, 3 years later, they're going back to get their GED.
Right.
But there's something wrong, and it starts at the top, and it goes all the way down.
How do you have the environment? And repeat the cycle. So children, they were bullies, and then they give birth to bullies, and then the bullies give birth to bullies, and then you have a vicious cycle going on. And yes, eventually those individuals will wind up dead or in jail. But
Dead or in jail. That's correct. It's unfortunate. It's very, very unfortunate. Do you know, it's another statistic, do you know about 25 to 30% of young people who try to volunteer to go into the military are rejected because they can't pass the written and math and English exam? What do you do with these kids?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
This is a major problem, but, it needs cooperation from our business leaders and our political leaders and our educational leaders to break the cycle or get the message out. And it's very, 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 very difficult. But it's real. It's here. Every day, you turn on the news at night, the first 15 minutes is murders, kidnappings, and robberies. I mean,
you know
it's just a terrible thing.
Yes, it is. And one of the things that I'm hearing and one of the things that we have missing that we don't have, we started when you talked about LeBron James and when you talked about Dwayne Wade, what these guys did, first of all, they came from an area where in their community, when they were in school, they had mentors. And It's like the mentorship, there hasn't been a push for it or people have decided to just pull back from doing that. A lot of these children, they don't, you know, I feel like kids don't know better when they don't have anyone to show them different. And they do become a product of their environment. And then they get into a situation where they feel like there's no way out. Who's going to help me out? Who's here for me? And you've got this cycle that continues. Because you got children having children, they haven't matured themselves, so how can they be able to actually raise a child when they're still a child themselves? And then you get into the situation where they become frustrated with their economical situation. They become frustrated with the environment itself. And once you got all of these different elements coming at a child, and a lot of time a child raising a child, that they take out their frustration on the child, and then the child has their only way of knowing how to communicate and get rid of their frustration is to become a bully and take it out on someone else in the school. And that's when I say when a mentor would come in and actually remove the child, even if it's only for an hour or two, out of their environment, showing them that you can be someone else. You can be better than what you are. You can make a difference in your life. It starts with you. You may not be able to look back at your parents and say they can help me. You can start yourself developing skills and everything. That's where a mentor comes in and help mentor them. And we in this country, we seem to have gotten away from reach one, teach one. And that we have become more, I'm getting mine, you better get yours. But if they don't know the route to take or to have the resources to develop other things or try different things or go different places, I mean, even with some of the situation, that, like with the school boards and everything, and like you said, your system, I'm in Michigan. And we have issues and everything with our school system and everything. It's like it's a broken product, and no one is trying to find the fixes. They're
like
putting Band-Aids on it and riding it out and say, okay, the few that wants to get it, let's just worry about them, the rest of them not. But they're missing the key thing, and that is our future is getting dimmer. Because those are the people who are going to be running this country. And the ones, you know, that are making it through, it's not enough of them to one day say that we can feel comfortable that our country is going to be in good hands. And if we don't look at the statistics and see how we are starting to slip, especially in the education department, because if we don't pick that up, we're going to become worse than a third world country. We're going to have invalid walking around, and this country is just going to pits.
We're going to be meeting
you. I know. I agree. I agree. And, you know, you talk about those babies for the teenagers. The figure is about 300,000 to 350,000 babies are born a year to girls who are 14 to 18.
Exactly.
And I know that. And mentoring is important, but unfortunately, they don't. The politicians, the schools, they don't understand, and they keep cutting the money. And there's just no one there to help. And, you know, when someone says to me, Lo, when you got involved in this, what was your passion about this? My passion was education in children, because the future of this country is based on education, and the future of this country are the children of today.
Exactly.
And that's it. Without education, I get it. I believe, my personal opinion is that we should go back to the way it was educated in my days, you know, the three R's, reading, write, and arithmetic. Teach basic, teach history, teach the Constitution, teach writing, teach, make it interesting instead of teaching to a particular test, and you have to take this test in April, and everybody's got, and my pay is based on this test. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous, but I don't know. You see, when I sit and talk to some of these politicians, I don't know if they have an interest in this. I don't think they have an interest.
They don't.
Oh, who cares?
They really don't have an interest in it. No,
I know that. I see that.
No, they do not have an interest in the future of our children. The interest that they have is how high can they go as a politician, period. And what's happening within their household. Outside of their household, they're clueless.
That's right.
Totally clueless.
They don't know what the real world is about. But why do these people keep voting for the same people over and over again?
That
is
the problem. Because there is no one voting.
Okay, people normally that are voting, but there's some that are voting. It's not enough people voting, but the ones that are voting, they want a quick fix. And these politicians have gotten to the point they know what they want to hear, and they give them that. And they get in the office, and they don't fulfill what they promise, because it becomes all about them.
Yeah. You know, I once came out and I spoke about this.
Take the questions and comments from the audience. I have Alisa Hamilton from Scandalous Divas. Alisa, are you there?
Yes, hi, Dr. Parker, and hi, Lowell. Thank you so much.
Hi.
The question that I have is going back to an earlier comment that Lowell made with regards to the young boy that came on the bus with a gun intended to not only kill the two bullies but all the others that were on the bus. Ergo, we would have had, you know, a mass murdering incident. Do you know what the statistics are of the victim of being bullied that comes back to go after the bully themselves?
Well, that is on the rise, because as long as teen violence is on the rise, and that's between the ages of 12 to 16, and that's what they have to watch, because those are the kids who wind up getting, it's easy to get a gun today, okay? And they have grandparents have guns, and parents have guns, and they don't lock them up. You saw what happened up in Newtown, Connecticut. But that is on the rise, where kids are now saying to themselves, I'm going to kill the bullies and everybody around them, and I'm going to be on national television. Because what's happening is they play these video games, and these video games are violent. And they go to the movies, it's violent. You put on there's nothing to watch on television anymore. Everything is murder and violence. I'm watching the reruns of Andy Griffith. I'm watching the reruns of Everybody Loves Raymond, because my wife and I, we can't watch it anymore, because that's giving a bad message. Where was I Love Lucy or My Three Sons? You know, today everything is shooting and killing and robbing and this and on television. So these kids who are young, not well educated, they get a gun, they have no future, they don't care, so they shoot themselves, but they want to go out with a glory. They want to shoot as many people as they can. So that's on the rise, and that's something that I don't know how they're going to control. But that's going to be a major problem.
Yeah,
because
that's concerning.
They used to kill, the bully used to kill himself. Now he wants to go out with a glory face. He wants to be on national television. Dead on national television.
It's almost a double-edged sword right now because you're looking at enough of the violence that's happening with the children that are being bullied, but then now the violence that's happening with the victim basically saying, I'm not going to take it anymore, and I'm going to take a violent, response.
That's right.
So
that's the biggest fear. That's why I say you send your child to school in the morning, he could be an innocent person, not being bullied, not a bully, sitting in a cafeteria, and you get a phone call, you better come over here. There has been a mass shooting in the cafeteria. So you send your child to school in the morning, there's no guarantee they're coming back in the afternoon. And that's what it's all about. These politicians, getting back to them, they all send their kids to private schools. They don't send them to public schools.
Well, even in the private schools, there's a problem. Because
private schools have problems too, but
sororities and all that there, so there's issues there. They're killing themselves as well.
Yeah, there are some. That's correct. You happen to be correct, but it's a concerted effort from the top down, and it starts at the governor of the state and works its way down, and they need to put money into helping these kids with mentors or mental health advisors in the school districts. And so they have someone to talk to. Or the teacher can see a problem and say, I think you better talk to Dr. So-and-so or the counselor or somebody. But they don't do it. They let them float around as they wish. And
Okay, let me take another call. We got the lines full. Alisa Hamilton, thank you so much for making the connection with Lowell Levine of Stop the Bullying Now Foundation and also with Mama Nova Through the Red Doors. This has just been a powerful experience. I have caller 9603. You're live.
Hi. Can you hear me?
No.
This is a call from Nest of Living Arts. I've been listening, but I'm so sorry. I was trying to get on earlier. How are you?
I'm well.
Hello?
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I've been listening thus far, and we want to thank Mr. Levine and also Ms. Alisa for their input. We are in practice and we just came out. We just wanted to briefly if you wanted us to talk about our story. Hello?
Yes.
I got one. We hear you.
Hi.
Okay.
Go ahead.
You have someone that want to share about their experience of being bullied?
Well, yes, ma'am. I know last week I talked about from an African-American perspective. My name is Aldul.
Yes.
I'm 20 years old. I teach hip-hop jazz at Nesta Living Arts. I also do PR marketing with Mama Nola. My personal story, like I said, was different, being the fact that from an African-American perspective, I was not taught of bullying. I actually spoke today with the poet Butterfly, if you're aware, and she actually said something that made sense. The word back in the day used to be peer pressure, not exactly bullying. So when my situation occurred, which I'll give a brief, I came back in town from Atlanta. I was 15 at the time. There was a girl on my bus who was apparently friends with my best friend at the time, but I thought we were friends. After a couple insults and embarrassment in front of our other friends, I realized that we weren't really friends. But at the time, which would be called bullying, I just thought it was just a girl being a girl, in high school. Unfortunately, because of those insults, it did lead to a confrontation that left me with a scar on my face. So it ended up being a bigger situation than what it was intended. And I wanted to point out, as someone young, being African-American, I told my parents, they didn't take it seriously as well. I did not know I was being bullied. I just thought we were just being young and being kids. So when the situation occurred and it got to that extent, that's when we thought, okay, now we need to bring awareness. Now we need to make moves. But it was already too late. Because if I never blinked my eye that day, I could have lost a right eyeball. And the point of getting my story out was so that we can know that there is bullying going on, especially among the African-American culture, if I say so myself, but we just don't acknowledge or put a title on that because we are taught to be tough or to hold your own or what they call in slang not to be soft. So I want to bring that awareness to especially parents who have come from that time and they understand those slang and terms. However, they don't take it to serious account for their child because they were raised that same in that same mentality.
Right. Princess, well, tell
you
me,
happen to be,
what
by
happened
way,
to your bully? Lowell, let me speak. Princess, what happened to your bully?
I'm sorry, you're breaking up slightly. Can you repeat yourself?
Yes, what happened to your bully?
My bully, we ended up having a case where I did have to press charges. She did have it on her record, but being the fact that it was not done on school property, they couldn't suspend her, so she was still around me every day. I still had to see her. You know, she was still around my area, but she was not able to go to school in Florida due to her record, and she had to go to school elsewhere. But, I mean, I also want to say this, too. As a victim of bullying, it was never my intent to get the bully in trouble because that's not my heart. That's not how I am. So for me, I really want those who are actually bullying to understand that really it's a cry for help, that they need to be talked to, they need attention, because I wouldn't say that she just wants to hate me just because she wants to hate me. I feel like maybe there was something going on within her life that maybe I didn't understand or maybe that she was going through that I never asked, and she just took it out on me. So I don't want to talk too much about how, you know, bad the bully is, because it's not always the bully that just comes out of nowhere and does these things, you know?
Yeah, but you're speaking out of the passion and this place of a victim, and that's how domestic violence people are. Like with me, as a victim of domestic violence, I didn't want to get my abuser in trouble, the perpetrator in trouble. I felt sorry for them, yet I was the one being abused.
Yes, I do understand. And that's hard. So it's my situation. It's, do you confront the bully or do you walk away? When I tried to tell my parents about it or my mother about it, she didn't seem to do much about it. So then who else do you tell? When you tell your teachers about it, oh, she's just jealous, girl. You know you're doing fine. You're doing well. Nobody's going to mess with you until it gets to that actual point in time where I'm confronting her, trying to solve why do you feel the way you feel about me, and it ends up with a cut on my face. So what I'm trying to get at is where do we go to prevent from it getting that far? Do we still confront the bully that we've been told, or who do we tell? It's only going to be more awareness to people knowing how serious the situation is that we're going to take it more seriously. Because at 15, that's all I could do. And the only thing I could do, which I tried to do, was fight back. And we see how that ended up.
Well, Lowell, now you can talk, Lowell.
Well, okay, I understand exactly what you're saying. I remember years ago, yes, it was peer pressure, or before that they used to call it teasing. But once it gets into the abuse and harassment, that's where we move into the bully situation. If you cannot get any cooperation from your parents, and that's where the education bullying awareness comes in. Once parents are educated enough to know that the simplest complaint by a child could lead into a serious problem to their child, they should jump into it. If you can't get the cooperation from your household and you can't get cooperation from grandparents, principal, or the teacher, the next step that I recommend is to talk to the police security at the school. And I've had success with them where they interjected and got involved and brought it out to the open. Do not confront a bully straight on, because you don't know what that bully is, if he's mentally ill or the bully's not, because you don't want that bully to beat you up and then you'll wind up either dead or permanently damaged. So you got to get to some adult who will listen to you. And police security is another avenue to go.
Thank you. We also have here with us Lil Nola Sade. She was one of the featured performers inside of Through the Red Door. Would you like to speak with her?
Yes, we'll have one more from your group.
Yes, ma'am. Hold on. Hi, I'm Sade Lalane, also known as Nola from the Through the Red Door production, anti-bullying production. The story that I brought to you did actually happen to me. I was the new kid. Yeah, I was a new kid on the block, I guess you can say. I went to a new area where an area, most importantly, an area I was not adapted to, used to. It was a mainly predominantly Caucasian, and I am African American, and it was a whole different mindset for me. It was Republican standard, very. I'm talking like having a Confederate flag as a belt kind of mentality, and I wasn't used to that. And my father, he taught me about Black history, and I to this day I adore Black history, and I adore, you know, the history of African Americans and everybody. And I'm very aware to everyone, and I'm very open-minded, and I accept everything and everyone, and religious, non-religious, different cultures, different backgrounds, everything, the whole nine. So now, I was only, 11 years old, and I was in that mindset. So I go to the school, and everyone is pretty much the exact opposite. And mind you, I was very nice. Oh, gosh, when I look back to this day, I was a sweetheart. I'm not saying I'm not a sweetheart now. I was just sweet to everyone. I was nice to everyone. And there was a couple girls who were my friends, and, you know, we became friends. And then a new girl came, and when she came, everyone started to like her. And then the new girl, she began to tease me. And she teased me,
okay,
and
so
I kind of
became the bully.
I'm sorry?
So new girl came in and was the bully.
Yes, she became the bully. She became everyone like, oh, don't mess with her. Don't, yeah, the new girl, all, you know. So me, I was like, okay, let me just, you know, I spoke to her and I was nice to her, and she would make comments like, what are you, an Oreo? You don't belong here. And who are you anyways? So I, like Azul said, that I, as an African-American, I didn't find it as bullying. I just found it as, okay, she doesn't like me, so let me just brush it off. I'll be good. And it kind of got to bigger steps, and it became an everyday thing. And I would tell my teachers, and I'd be like, Miss, she is bothering me. I really do not feel comfortable with this. Can you please do something? And she would be like, okay, well, you know, it's nothing really. You're going to be fine. She would move my seat, and when I would move to my seat, I thought it was all good. And I would come back to my desk if I was to leave to go to the bathroom. My textbooks would be literally ripped in half. I would have writing on my textbook, and I would be sitting down by myself, and the girls would be in a group, mind you, the same girls that were once my friends. Beginning to tease me as well, and they would laugh, and I didn't find this funny, and it was just very hard for me to accept this, and it became an everyday thing. This became when I had to kind of get used to it. I had to get used to, okay,
wow,
they're not my friends anymore. I'm going to have to, you know, and this was a point when I was really on my own, because even my best friend at that time, she kind of turned on me. She kind of liked what they were doing. She was like, Oh, yeah, you're nobody. Who are you? You don't belong here. You don't know anyone from the school. You didn't even go to school here. That kind of stuff. So then it came worse to worse. I would go to lunch. I would leave my bag down at the table. I would leave to go get a fork or to go see my sister. And I would come back. My food would be all over the table. It would be opened. It would be teared. And I would have nothing to eat for lunch. And there was another incident when I was in the portable. We had a math class in the portable, and there was a substitute. And I had the same girl who was bullying me in that class. So I came into the classroom, and I was like, oh, boy, here it comes. So I'm sitting down, and they were messing around, and I didn't pay attention to them because I wanted to sit in the front of the class. And then she comes behind me. She taps me, and I was like, what? And then she grabs, which I was noticing, they were messing around with a rubber band. And they picked it up from the floor, and they were pushing it to each other, and they're putting it through each other's shirts, and it's just disgusting. And she took the rubber band, and she shoved it in my mouth, and she pushed me.
Wow.
And I was just like, oh, this is enough. So I kind of pushed her back, and then my substitute was like, okay, ladies,
let's sit down, let's sit down. And I have never felt so disrespected in my life. You can call me names, you can do anything, but I think to the point where you had to put your hands on me was just, you know, out of line. And it wasn't a good day for me. And I vividly remember I was in the car with my mother, and I hadn't really told her about any of this. This has been going on for months and months and days after days, and I was just putting myself through this, and I didn't tell her. I was like, let me, you know, Shade, suck it up, you'll be all right, just keep going through it, you know. And that's what I thought. And I remember I was in the car with my mother, and I was talking to her and whatever. She, you know, she asked me, oh, sweetie, how's your day? And I was like, it was good, you know, school is school. And I was like, oh, by the way, this girl, she shoved a rubber band in my mouth. And she was like, what? She completely stopped. And she was driving, and she was slowing down the car. And I was telling her, this girl who's been bothering me, she basically kind of put her hands on me, and she physically, you know, pushed me. And she was like, she went bonkers. She was like, you know, why didn't you tell me this? She's been bothering me for how long? What? Oh, my goodness, Shade, why didn't you tell me? Oh, my. And, you know, I didn't think about that. Honestly, I didn't think, oh, my gosh, I should have told her from day one. I didn't think about it because I didn't mind. I thought, you know what, everybody's going to like you. You're just going to have to push through it, you know, grow some thicker skin and just go through it. And I started noticing, hey, this is wrong. Not when she put my food all over the table, not when she ripped my textbooks in half, not, you know, any of that, not when she spread rumors about me, but the point when she put her hands on me. That's when I decided to say something. And that year, that was sixth grade year, that year was a disaster for me, because that happened. That was my first year. I was just starting to make friends, and then I kind of lost all my friends because they all became friends with that girl. They all said, oh, did you see what she did to Sade? Oh, that was hilarious. I wish I could have saw her face. Oh, she's a punk. She's a wuss. She can't fight back. That kind of stuff. So that's something I had to go through. And once my mother, she went to the school, and they would tell her, you know, she's trying to get attention, and, you know, girls at this age. And my mother was furious. She was furious, and she wanted to speak to the officer. And from there, she wanted to speak to the counselor. So she spoke to the counselor, and I can tell you, to this day, my sixth grade counselor, she is one of my bestest friends. She is one of my bestest friends, and I'm so thankful to have her in my life because she really helped me. Because once we got to sit on the situation cleared up at the end, this was probably about the end of the year, and I remember it was the last day of sixth grade, and everybody was like, oh, I'm going to miss you. Oh, no one said goodbye to me. No one said, bye, Shade, see you next year. Nothing. And I remember I had a new haircut that day. I had bangs. And I remember I was sitting by myself, and they were all kind of, you know, clustered together, and they were making gestures with their hands and their foreheads, kind of to, you know, make fun of my bangs. And I remember they threw papers at me, and I would rush out of the school, and my mom was like, oh, Shade, aren't you happy? And I was just, you know, I would just not say anything. And that was, you know, one of the worst moments. And then seventh grade came around. Seventh grade was a little bit better because now some people, you know, they're like, all right, let's, you know, let's leave them alone. And the girl who bullied me, she stopped going to that school. Seventh and eighth grade, I have not seen her. I have not seen her at all. I don't know if she moved, but she just moved away. She didn't come back. And seventh grade, everyone kind of forgot about it, but not everyone did. Everyone still didn't. I would walk in the hallway.
So the bullies
and rotated. Yes.
Wow.
Well, thank you so much for sharing
your experience, and I'm so glad that you were able to survive it and push your way back through it and have the courage to be who you are in spite of someone who tried to snatch your dreams away.
Yes, and throughout those 2 years, it kind of got better, and I found my way to escape it, to escape that depression that I was kind of having, because it was very, very hard for me. And
I became a peer counselor at my school, actually, for 2 years. That's when I kind of got more closer to my guidance counselor. I became a peer counselor. I counseled underclassmen, and I taught them, and I mediated, and it felt good. It felt good to actually be that person that someone could talk to, and it made me feel better inside, and I am so glad that I did that. And then at the Nest Living Arts, I was also a counselor there for the Share Tons and Respect Summer Camp. I was counselor, and I taught the children human rights lessons, and I taught them lessons about everything, about respect, about love, about tolerance, about peace, about accepting one another, and it felt good to do that. It felt good, and now they have an understanding that they I can't put into words, but they have an understanding now that this is not right. You know, bullying, no one, I believe that no one should go through bullying. Bullying is not something, exactly, it takes so much away from your life. It takes so much away from you as a person. It breaks you down, and luckily, you can find a way out, and there was always a way out. It is always, you have to speak up, and honestly, you know, suicide is never not the answer, and it never will be the answer. Or self-harming is not going to be your escape because it's going to make it worse. Speaking up is going to make it better. Don't confront the bully as well. Do not. I never wanted to confront my bully because I was afraid. And also, you don't know what's going through the bully's head. That is most important. You don't know what they're thinking. Maybe they're going through something at home, and then they come here where they feel a sense of power. And then now they have someone standing up to them, and they're like, oh, no. And, you know, they could bring guns to school. They could bring knives to school. They could attack the bully.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the worst. Never confront your bully. Go to someone that you trust. Don't go to a friend that you just know. Go to someone you trust. Go to your guidance counselor. If you don't believe your parent will solve the issue, go to your guidance counselor. I guarantee you they care. They care like a parent. They will sit you down and say, okay, because that's what they did with me. They said, okay, Sade, tell me what you feel. How can we fix this? How can we do this? Sade, the best thing to do is X, Y, and Z. You're going to be okay. And that's what she told me. She told me, you're going to be okay. And all it took was for her to say that. And that really changed my life.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. So, Lowell, your experience in working with the school, do you think it's better coming from you or coming from someone like Sade when you're addressing the bully as far as counseling?
Both. Whatever has to be done. I was listening to this story. How old are you now, 15?
I am 14.
14. Well, I want to be honest with you. I listened to your whole story. You are brilliant. You're a very bright girl, and you have a tremendous amount of common sense and street sense and education sense. And the guidance counselor was the breakthrough because the others were not handling it properly. The principal apparently didn't bring the bully and her parents in and you and your parents in to sit down and see if you could work it out. But you were able to gain enough strength and enough confidence because of the guidance counselor to overcome it. And now no one could bully you anymore, and you could help other children that are being bullied. But what you said about not confronting the bully, I was talking about that about a half hour ago, is true, because you don't know who the bully is, and over 1,000 children in this country that we know of in 2012 were killed by bullies because they try to interfere with their power. They were seriously damaged. But you're on the right track, and you did the right thing, and you got out of it, and now it's going to be almost impossible for anybody to bully you. But yet you got the leadership qualifications from your experience to help other children. Because I've had many children around the country your age up to 16 here in the county who have asked me to help them set up what is called a social or anti-bullying program within themselves and their friends, and I have been able to send them information and help them. But the more you speak to, the more adults you get to, like I said to the previous caller, if you couldn't get to the principal, the teacher, get to the security guard. the school police. You got to get to somebody who can take it by the bull by the horn and go forward. And that's what we try to do when we get involved. We go to the politicians, we go to the principal, we go to the school board, we go to the school superintendent. There's got to be somebody who's going to say, I'll handle it for you, Lowell. Don't worry about it. And that's, you just can't give in and quit because it's not going to go away by itself.
Wow. Yes. Thank you all so much for joining us on this Hot Topic from the Show episode. Lowell, can you give some closing remarks, tell people how to connect with you, with your organization, and then we will hear from spoken word artist Jairus Alexander.
Yes, if you go on my website, it's StopBullyingNowFoundation.org, and there's information on there as well as contact information if anybody needs my help or needs my advice. And if anybody's willing to or they know people that want to donate to the cause so that we have enough money to be able to get the message out, which is educate bullying awareness, so we could put it under control and reduce it to a point where it's tolerable, even though we're not going to get rid of it completely, but we can reduce it and save a lot of hardship to the young boys and girls and their families because of what's happening today. But I thank you very, very much for inviting me to come on the show. It was quite enjoyable, and I loved listening to the children with their stories because they were right on target.
Yes, indeed. They are such brave princesses. Mama Nola calls them her little birds, but they're my little princesses.
I know. I met Mama Nola. I know. I saw their performance in the hotel when they had we had a conference, and these kids were terrific.
Absolutely magnificent. And I tell you, to have a visual to have it come out of the mouth of babes that they're tired of this and they want help, they need help. And, you know, we have got to take our rightful place as adults, you know, because it really begins with us. These bullies didn't just show up. We gave birth to them. So it's
everything starts at the home, right? Everything starts at the home, right?
Absolutely.
From the day they're born.
It starts with us. Like I said, they weren't born in an egg. We gave birth to them.
That's correct. And it's how you bring them up and how you educate them and how you nourish them and is a big plus.
Yes, indeed. So thank you so much for joining us. And those of you that are listening in and want further information or want to connect with any guests on the show, you can contact me at soultopics@gmail.com. That's soultopics@gmail.com. And I invite you to visit my website, www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. And now, Jairus Alexander, are you there?
I am here. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening. You're a spoken word artist, and you have a special treat for us tonight.
Yes, I wanted to read a small piece for everyone out there about bullying, if you all don't mind. It goes like this. I'm just trying to understand, when will this senseless nonsense stop? Watching this same young man and his brother peacefully kiss and wave goodbye to their mother every weekday morning, leaving out of their houseway, walking just a few blocks away on their way to the bus stop. Knowing good and well, just like on any other morning prior to today, that if they dare have the nerve to take the fastest route, they will run into the same old living roadblock. Because sitting dead, smacking the center of the sidewalk of the shortcut alleyway as the same group of young cats moving enough illegal white rocks in amounts large enough that you think if the right person were just to talk in the wrong person's ear, they could easily get knocked for a lifelong sentence of years to serve out somewhere out there on someone's prison yard, a long way from where these young boys are. The strange part is, that's not the gloomy, looming possible cloud of truth or fear that's even looming for these young men. It's the what if. That being, what if someone were to ever find out that one of these two young men decided to talk to someone about of what they passed by on a daily basis that brought on their fears of what they saw. It was more than just the fear of those two young men feeling that regardless if those same young cats that loaded that daily middle block that blocked everything off, whatever knocked, was not the largest fear. It was the fact that even if they were knocked, that another group of young men would replace them and another set of bullying would begin. And it would be another group of young men with their lines and their waistlines holding 9mm Glocks to just bother them, just as they're just trying to leave their house. On the way to their school bus, they decide instead to take another route in an entirely different direction, over numerous fences, climbing through ditches in another neighborhood section on a dead sprint, hoping they just make it to another place where they know their school bus picks up as well. Because they both know good and well, if they make it in time, they both would have successfully made it once again on another bus ride to school and at least just given a little bit more time away from the bullying way of life that they've grown so used to. Two middle school kids that have grown accustomed to a way of life that they never should have had to grown accustomed to.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the piece.
Wow. Thank you so much, George, for that, Pete. How can individuals connect with you or follow your work?
They can definitely find me on all the social networks. I also go by the poet name of Quick the Poet, and it's spelled all together. I keep it all together to keep it simple for folks. It's QUICKTHEPOET. I host two different shows, one that being in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, takes place every first and third Sunday. My last show, at least of 2013, will be this upcoming Sunday, and it takes place at a location called Copa Lounge. The address is 3802. That's North University Drive, and that's in Sunrise, Florida, and it's called Floetry Sundays. The other show is in Naples, Florida. If anybody's on that side of the south, at least on that side of southwest Florida, it's at a location on that end in the city. We're actually looking for another. Me and my business partner, Edwin Shepard, are looking for another location. Hopefully, if this growth keeps continuing, but we love it on that end of where we're at in Naples, and it's called Sunset Rewind. But other than that, at least on email, it's the same thing as well, quickthepoet@yahoo.com. And look forward to hearing from any and all. You're more than welcome.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you contributing
you so
to
much.
This segment of Hot Topics from the Soul. And in closing, I'd like to say, Edmund Burke says, evil prevails when good men do nothing. Bullying is our problem. We must do something as opposed to doing nothing. Good night.
I agree.